Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50. Luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.
It's the most talked about TV show that's not on TV.
And I think you guys are amazing.
With raw, honest opinions.
This was not a mistake. This was a lie.
Exclusive stories.
Some industry insiders have been talking about this.
Is that a Ben Robin Robbo exclusive?
And plenty of famous faces.
I'm not wasting these gold moments on 60 Minutes.
The Ben Robin Robbo Show is the new way to stream your news.
This is the stuff that headlines are made of.
Live every Monday to Thursday at 1 p.m. Australian Eastern Standard Time on Ticker TV or Facebook and Twitter at BRR Show. Watch live or on demand. Ben, Rob and streaming across the globe, Ben Norris, Rob McKnight and David Robinson. Ben, Rob and Robbo. Welcome to the Ben Robin Robbo Show. Here's Rob McKnight.
Hello and welcome to another big edition of the Ben Robin Robbo Show. I'm so excited about today's episode and you'll find out why in just a moment. But first, let's bring in the boys. It's David Robinson and Ben Norris. And Ben, I almost can't look you in the eye because I accidentally did a nudie run in front of you today. My camera is always open and Ben had connected and I realised, and let's just say I wasn't prepared.
Look, to be fair, I thought it was an exclusive trailer that had just dropped for the Lord of the Rings prequel Gollum. So I was like, this is exciting. And then I was like, oh, hang on a sec, that's my boss. And then I was like, I better go get my partner so he can watch. And then by the time partner came in here, you were gone. So
I thought you were going to say you thought you had to rescue the beached whale, but...
No. I thought it was the trailer when you turned around and you saw yourself in the mirror and you said, my precious. And I was like... Oh, wait, that's Rob McKnight.
Where was I looking when I said that? That's more concerning.
at yourself right down the barrel of the camera.
Oh, right, okay.
Hey, pull yourselves together because we've got a really special guest and you two are being like gross little schoolboys, for goodness sake.
I know. Let's bring her in because it is a very special Tuesday as we are joined by a special guest host for the entire show. Let's meet her.
She graced our screens for the first time in 1993 and since then has become an icon of Australian television. Whether hosting sporting events or teaching us how to better our homes and gardens, Joanna Griggs knows her way around our small screens and we love her. Her talents don't stop there, as she boasts a record-winning swimming career, earning herself a bronze medal in the Commonwealth Games. It's no surprise that she has an Order of Australia because she is Australian royalty. Welcome to the Ben Robin Robbo Show, Joanna Griggs.
Yay! Yeah.
My pleasure to be here. that was very lovely.
Joe, luckily I was dressed when we did our technical check earlier today, so you didn't have to put up with the nudity, but welcome. To the Ben Robin Robbo Show.
Thank you. I don't know whether I should feel a little bit ripped off.
No. You don't feel ripped off. You feel very, very happy. Yes.
Joe, it is
my pleasure to be here.
It is such a thrill to have you here. I think you know I'm a huge fan of yours. You're doing Better Homes and Gardens for 15 years now, and you have survived in one of the toughest industries that there is. What do you love about the show? How have you survived in the TV industry? Because it's a cutthroat industry.
Look, it certainly is. I've been in the industry for now coming up to 27 years. Better Homes is a delight, if I were to focus on that. It's absolutely magic. It's a show that's all positive. We only celebrate people or great ideas or great design or innovations. I work with people, all who are experts in their own field, and our production team is actually just as important as our on-camera team, and we don't have anyone work on the show who doesn't love it as much as we do. So Better Homes is a joy. Sport, I love. I still love live sport. It's still the thing that probably excites me the most and is the closest that you can actually get to competing as an athlete. You only have that one chance to get into trouble and one chance to get out of it. But as far as longevity, and I'd have to say it's through sticking through your guns and being authentic. And it's not always an easy path doing that because you can get into a lot of trouble, which I regularly do. But, I came from an incredibly close, amazing, huge family who instilled in us from a very young age that how you start's how you finish, and as long as you can sleep at night, you're generally okay with whatever choices you make as long as you can live with them. And I think that's actually what's held me in good stead.
Yeah, I think that's very
brilliantly
fair.
Said, Joe. I've got to bring up. You had to cut short your swimming career because of health issues. I've got to say, on behalf of Australia, we're glad whatever those health issues were, because it means we get to enjoy you on the screen for this many years. But how hard that felt weird to say. So I hope it wasn't something serious. How hard is it to be forced to walk away from something like that? And I meant all of that respectfully and lovingly. But
I get it. And actually, the funniest thing about that is it's actually a little bit of a myth that I think a lazy journalist put in one day because it was easier than explaining the whole story. So I was really sick at 17 and had a year and a half out of the pool, went back into the pool, had to pull out of the Olympic trials in 92, went away for 6 months, came back against doctor's orders and actually finished number one in the world in March of 93. So the myth that swimming cut short my career was one of those things that somebody's gone, oh, hang on, that's too hard to explain in a sentence. Let's just say the illness cut short. It definitely was the period of my life I learned the most about myself. Because, I was at a stage earning a lot of money from the sport, lost all my sponsors, learned a lot about human nature, where if something's a little bit difficult for people and they haven't got a quick fix, they generally will avoid it rather than actually face it head on. Yeah. So I, over that course of the year, I only had about four friends who, lots of friends at the start who came to visit, but only four who by the end of the year were coming.
Wow.
Because it was just too confronting. But that said, I actually got to go back. I went back twice. The second time I was successful. And if you are going to stop a sport and retire, I would suggest that you stop it when you're number one in the world. Now, it's kind of, even that's a bit of a twist, because, that was in March of that year, so I guarantee you by the end of that year I may not have been number one, but at that exact moment I hit the wall I was.
You've got to go out a winner, Joe.
Yeah, and I'd had 2.5 years on a wheat-free, yeast-free, egg-free, corn-free, malt-free, sugar-free, beef-free, dairy-free, herb-free, spice-free, caffeine-free diet.
Oh, God. And, wait, what did you eat, air?
A heart rate.
Were you eating air?
Yeah. I was a breatharian. No, I self-improved. But as I say, it is literally the period that I'm most grateful for. It was a terrifying period for my mum because she was a school teacher, and I had had a total of several months of secondary education as opposed to the 6 years that you're meant to get. And so when I announced my retirement, her big fear was, what are you going to do? And I was very fortunate that I had three network contract offers within 24 hours, and I actually chose seven back then. Yeah, amazing. Because now I realise how many athletes hope that's the path, but it just doesn't happen. Yeah. The opportunities aren't given these days. And, I chose seven because they promised training and learnt the first rule of television very early, which is they'll say anything to get you to sign a contract.
Well, you've got to play nice, and I will say, you've absolutely needed to evolve throughout the years, and I think that's probably why your career has been so successful. We've seen COVID shut down a lot of television productions. What's the near future now looking like for Better Homes and Gardens? I know that there's so many people listening to this now going, come on, hopefully it's not one of the shows that's going to have any scheduling changes. What's it looking like at the moment?
Oh, Ben, if it was scheduling changes, our show, we are all across that shit. We've done that for years.
That's so fair enough.
To be perfectly honest, we were one of the very few productions in Australia who actually kept going throughout the entire lockdown period. And that required an amazing amount of adaptability from our team, huge communication, fantastic leadership. We had to split the team almost into three different groups. We have four presenters who are actually in lockdown in Melbourne. We obviously can't fly producers in down there. So it has required this monumental rethink, and I've been really proud of how everyone has actually reacted and responded. And we've been able to actually find a lot of really positive, good news stories in a time where we're just being saturated with so many terrible stories and sad stories. And, you know, from a Beyond Blue point of view, as a board director, I know the impact that endless kind of reinforcing of bad news can have for people. So that's the other great thing Better Homes does. It's 90 minutes of good news every week that a whole family can sit in front of.
Which is so good. You know what, Joe? I just realised you can swim underwater and you can talk underwater. I think you're going to give us all a run for our money today. I'm so excited about you being on the show. This is going to be so much fun. So I just want to thank you so much.
Ben, it's why I was a backstroker and not a freestyler.
I thought that was a different reason, but we'll find out more about that later.
All right, we're getting too loose. Move
now on. You're really part of the show, Joe. Look, look forward to getting your views on the hot topics all through the show, so let's get into them. And when Jim from Jim's Mowing gets irritated, you certainly know about it. The franchise king appeared again on the Nine Network's Today Show talking about how the Victorian government's handling of the COVID-19 pandemic has been terrible. Jim didn't mince words when he said the Premier, Dan Andrews, has blood on his hands. Carl Stefanovic put to the Mowing man that comment was incredibly provocative, but he didn't back down.
Well, it's true, because our industry is no threat to public health at all. A lone operator working alone in a garden is no threat to health. But when you throw tens of thousands of people out of work without need, you talk about mental health issues, suicide, drug addiction, child abuse, domestic violence and the rest. There's a lot of really, really grim things. I know there's independent operators out there who are on suicide watch because of this. So yes, people will die as a result of the Premier's actions.
Again, there was more fire in the two-stroke when Jim Penman unequivocally called for Dan Andrews to resign.
No matter what you all say, no matter how much business rallies, and the rallying calls are from every street corner right now, the Victorian government doesn't listen to business.
No, absolutely does not listen. Look, I have asked some very simple questions to the Premier again and again. Why did you change your own regulations, your own expert advice that sole operators could operate safely? Why did you change that? How come council operators can work in groups when our people can't alone? The Premier has flatly refused even to answer the simplest questions. This idea that he consults with business is ludicrous. It's a joke.
Do you think he should stand aside?
Oh, absolutely he should. He really should. He is an utter incompetent. He has stuffed the quarantine. He's stuffing the contact tracing. He's stuffing the testing. The only thing he's good at is trashing the Victorian economy, especially industries like mine, which are no threat to public health. He should absolutely step down. He should be tossed out by his own party.
Wow, you are not...
Wow, Joe... Is this selfish? Is it helpful? What do you make of this?
Look, I think it's always the easiest position that you can take in a time of crisis is the pile on. And to be perfectly honest, I don't think anyone in those situations is actually actively going out there to try and ruin people's lives. So, you know, the other part of that interview was Carl talking about the numbers coming down. And yes, there is some angst for plenty of operators when you think, okay, at the moment in Victoria in construction, you can have five people working on a new build, or you can have people working on a build where there's a separate, you know, bathroom and washing facility. So then you question why people can't get out and garden if it is in, you know, following all the protocols that everyone else is. But I don't think it's helpful when you're just constantly piling on someone who is actually trying to look after the health of more than just one sector and one group of people.
Well, that's the point. Dan Andrews said on 7:30 last night he couldn't care less about politics. Leadership at a time like this is about doing what's right, not what's popular. Robbo, I want to bring this to your attention. Do you know Jim Penman's name isn't actually Jim? His name is David Penman. Do you know?
Well, it's a fantastic name.
Do you know that he fired his own sister? They no longer speak. She fired him. The quotes in an article from the SMH on March 1, 2019, say there's always a revolving door at the National Office, and when it comes to business, he's ruthless. Is this just him being ruthless, happy to bring down a premier so that he gets what he wants and his business is A-OK no matter whether people die?
Yeah, I agree with Joe. It seems like a pile-on is very, very fashionable at the moment, and that's what he's doing. It strikes me with Jim/David/mowing man/ whatever.
Slash Karen.
It strikes me with him that this does seem like not actually a focus or a love for his franchisees. It's more of a focus on the fact that the franchisees won't be able to bring him in money. So I understand what he's saying. There are some valid points that he brings up in regards to business, and has there been a lot of discussion with business? You know, of course. But he just seems to be on this kind of attack on Premier Dan Andrews because he can't do the work. He did bring up an interesting point later in the interview where he said that, you know, council workers working in groups were still able to go to parks and things like that. You know, that is a discrepancy, and he is a big businessman, so I guess he does get to kind of have that voice or kind of, you know, allow that stage for him to walk out on. But it does seem pretty selfish from where he's coming from. I've also heard, this is allegedly, I can't say allegedly enough, allegedly, that David Jim Penn, whatever his name is, mowing, he is not a very nice businessman. But hey.
Well, he fired his sister, so he's certainly of a certain ilk. Ben,
we wouldn't have fired their sister in that. I mean, I would have fired my sister a million times if I worked with her.
And they would have fired you. I would say that also might be a factor. But I want to quickly say something.
Sorry?
I actually don't mind people who want to come forward and challenge the Premier. I don't think that's necessarily a problem, but I really would appreciate them sticking to a sensible argument. And yes, he did bring up some validity in some of his arguments, but his general nature and his tone, it is promoting fear, and fear is leading to hate. And people like him are galvanizing these other people out there to also come online, and they're going that step further. And they're saying that Dan Andrews should be pulled out of his house and shot. So what I would like to say about these types of people is read the play. Understand what we're going through in Melbourne. You might have a valid point, but sharpen your ideas if you're going to be on national television and be really smart about it.
Good on you, Ben. All right, let's move on to our next topic. And the Olympic flame will burn in Tokyo next year, no matter what. That's the blunt message from the International Olympic Committee that the rescheduled 2020 Games will go ahead on July 23rd next year, with or without COVID. Joe, you're our Olympian girl. Do you think the Olympic Games should go ahead no matter what the situation is?
Very torn with this one. Obviously, covering Tokyo will be my 7th Olympics and 2nd Paralympic Games. And I know for a lot of athletes, they are just hanging on by a thread to know that those games are going ahead. I think either way, a decision has to be made sooner rather than later for the athletes. And if you look at the decision that was made to delay, pretty much the IOC and the IPC were the very last people to finally acknowledge that the Olympics and Paralympics couldn't go ahead in 2020. And that actually mentally destroyed a lot of athletes right then, who then had to reassess their goals. Plenty of them retired. So part of, like, my head says, I'm not sure if it will, either of them will go ahead. My heart says, gosh, I hope they do go ahead. But there are just so many things at play. I mean, you look at where we are now, even if there is a vaccination, are they going to be able to vaccinate 15,000 athletes plus 6 support people per athlete, put them in one village all together with many of them playing contact sport? I don't know.
Than contact sport. We all know what goes on at the Olympics. Isn't condom like the biggest, it's more valuable than money, condoms are at the Olympics, in the Olympic Village. But, Joe, you know, I do get it, because when I think of you, I can't help but remember this moment from 2000 when you got to run, got the torch outside the Sydney Opera House. And I remember seeing you in interviews and you just had tears. And I think this was a moment Australia really fell in love with you. Anyone of who watched those scenes and how much you just loved that moment, this is Australia will forever love you because of this moment, I think. I think you could kill... Mm-hmm. You're like Donald Trump. You could kill a man and Australia would still love you.
Okay, because... too far.
I don't think so.
All right, maybe too far. But you can, yeah. My point being that, in all seriousness, you can see the joy that you had in that moment, and that's obviously what people all around the world want to get back to with having the Olympics back on.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, the whole 2 weeks of the Sydney Olympics and the 3 weeks we did Olympic Sunrise was extraordinary. But the reason, part of the reason why I was so emotional, just apart from the love and the joy and the sheer excitement about the Olympics that you felt from just masses and masses of people that were down at Circular Quay, was in the pre-briefing, you know, we're in there with some pretty amazing people, and Olivia Newton-John was asking if her daughter could run with her, and they were saying absolutely not, absolutely no children, no support staff, no one is, you know, they cannot run with you, you've been selected. And I, you know, was a single mom going through a pretty interesting stage as far as child custody right through the Sydney Games, and I came around the corner, and in the middle of the street were my two boys who were aged, you know, 3 and 2, and my nephew who was 3, and I just kind of lost the plot, as you saw. And when I went up to them, I said, this policeman said to me, look, I just, the only thing that would have made seeing my dad run would have been if we could have run with him. And I thought, what are they going to do the night before the game? Sack me. And so he had actually gone into the crowd, got the kids out and brought them into the middle of the road.
Oh,
so
brilliant.
Unbelievable.
Amazing.
I thought you were going to say you saw Olivia Newton-John ringing the producers of Strictly, no, what is it, Dancing with the Stars, and asking if her daughter could be in the show.
Back in 2000, right. Yeah, that's a lot of forethought.
It took a lot of phone calls to get Chloe into Dancing with the Stars. Anyway, waste a joke. Sorry, everybody.
No, it was funny. But what I will ask you, Ben, is... should the Olympics go ahead on the topic, if there is a chance of, you know, COVID's surely still going to be around, it's going to be really hard to have a situation where it won't spread.
Well, I'm a little bit like Joe in the sense that I'm a little bit in two minds, because I think that there is something really positive about us looking forward to something. I think that we don't have that crystal ball, though, to be able to tell what it's going to be like at that time. So it seems a little bit preemptive to say that, look, we're going to go ahead with this regardless, because we are going to need to continue to evolve. But like I said, you know, there's a lot of Australians, there's a lot of people around the world right now looking for some hope and looking for something really positive. And that's what sport is about. And I've spoken about this throughout this whole pandemic, and that is the power of sport. I'm not a big sports fan, but I certainly understand that is the fibre of a lot of people's lifestyles. It's so important in their routine, and I think that looking forward to the Olympics is important.
And look, Robert, there's also a lot of money involved here. The television rights to the Olympics is a huge deal, you know, and a lot of broadcasters rely on the ratings that the Olympics generate.
Yeah, I agree with Ben and Joe. I think that this is the kind of thing that the world needs. And I think in a year's time, we either are going to learn to live with COVID or still be in this kind of weird idea that we can get rid of it. I just don't think we can get rid of it. But if we can make the games as safe as possible, because like Joe said, you know, there are 15,000 athletes who, you know, everything that they do in their lives, from the moment they wake up to the moment they go to sleep, they are focusing on competing in this wonderful stage, this world stage of sport. And I just think that, yeah, it obviously had to be cancelled this year. That, you know, we can't deny that. But I think I actually appreciate the IOC coming out and say, COVID or not, we're going to put these games on. So, yes, it might not have an opening ceremony. It might not have a closing ceremony. You know, there might be things a little bit different, but at least, you know, all the people around the world who have trained and have done the air diet that Joe talked about at the beginning of the show, where they just ate air, they need their time to enjoy the fact that they haven't just eaten air for no reason, that they can get there. And I also think it's like
good
like
point.
Ben said, it's a really important thing for us to look forward. You know, the Olympics, it's a global movement. You know, it connects everything in a way that nothing else does. And I think it would be very important to keep that flame burning. Sorry to sound so cliche at the end there. It sounded better in my head.
But I loved it.
That's good.
Keep the flame burning. No, I feel like I should go to Hallmark now and write some cards. I feel weird about that. But that's, you know what I'm trying to say. I'm trying to pivot.
We need to find money where we can. So I think it's a good idea.
Yeah. Could be a side business for the Ben Robin Robbo show.
Hang on, can I just work out? None of us will be getting money for that. It'll actually be...
No. Yeah. No, Joe. No, look, I'll give you a credit, like a really tiny credit at the bottom underneath the price, but I can't actually give anyone else some money on
the
this.
The thing
one,
I love, so Robbo will need someone else to make it happen, so I'll be able to cash in because he won't be able to do it by himself, so I'll be right. All right, it's the end of an era in Aussie retail with Woolies now stopping change of mind refunds. The supermarket giant now says that if you take a product home and change your mind, you can no longer bring it back and get a refund. Instead, the 94-year-old company suggests sharing the unwanted products with the elderly and vulnerable. If you change your mind or purchase the wrong product, you can still exchange it for something else in the store. Coles made the change in March, and Woolies says its policy brings it into line with current supermarket practice. Robbo, I've never actually returned a product to the store. I've never gone, oh, wrong product, I don't want it anymore, I'll take it back. I've just lived with it.
Yeah, but maybe you have the financial capabilities to do that, where you go out of the shop and you go, oh, bloody hell, I bought the wrong thing.
No, probably just too lazy.
All that, but either or. No, I would suggest you, if you were in the financial position to be able to do that, you're not. Yes, you are lazy, but if you were not in the financial position to do that, you're not lazy. Sorry. You actually go and... Okay? All right.
Yeah, no, I was laughing. Laughing just because you're so funny. Yeah.
Were you not used to us laughing at your jokes, Robbo? Is that what happened there?
There was no joke there. That's the problem. There was no joke. Let's bring it back. This is a serious issue. Serious issue. So,
okay, fair enough.
I think it is a big thing where when people can't return something. So there was this story where a woman had bought the different, you know, box of Coke, you know, the 20 cans were on special. She bought the 30 cans, she bought them back, and, you know, she was told not to. But in the end, she spent a lot of money on extra cans that she didn't want to, whatever, right? So that's fine. But when you're dealing with a company that made almost $60.5 billion in revenue in the last financial year, you've got to ask yourself, is this the right time to bring in a policy like this? The policy of changing your mind has been around for decades. If you've done the wrong thing, they're happy to do it. I don't know that this is the right time for a $60 billion company to be saying to Australians, hey, you know, nah, we're going to get rid of that, that policy and just deal with it. I think it's wrong.
Ben, what do you think?
I think that I like the ability to return things.
Why is Joe laughing?
Because
I thought I was being really serious, Joe.
I cannot wait to respond. I think that's wrong.
Okay, great. Well, just good. Okay,
really
good.
Quickly, before we let Joe say her thing, I was going to say, I like to be able to return products because every day my partner goes to the shops to buy the same drinks that we get, and he still gets the diet version. He never reads the labels. He's like... And it literally makes me so upset because I can't have the phenylalanine or whatever it's called, the fake sugar. It makes me feel really nauseous. So I have to go and take it back. Yeah, it's gross. Anyway,
oh my God.
Joe?
It really puts in perspective, you know, the people that are going through
Robbo,
no houses.
I knew he was going to say that.
Mute him. It really puts in perspective thoughts.
I want to hear what Joe has to say.
Sorry.
Joe, well, between sorry. Ben's partner, who is unable to obviously read when he actually gets through, so my husband, or maybe he's trying to tell Ben something. I got my husband a special sniffer. Like, he will sit there and he will stand in an aisle and we can't buy something until he's worked out the special here, the special there. Honestly, Robbo, if it was you when you walked into a supermarket and you just grabbed what you wanted and then you just went and paid for it, when you got home you realised how much you paid for it, I'd understand. But even the people who are sitting there and working out their budgets, the prices are there. So you actually have an option at that point to actually choose what you're going to choose and to work out what you're going to pay. And if it's too much at that point and you've worked out you paid $20 extra for a box of Coca-Cola, there should be some little, you know, red flag going off in your mind that actually that's not the one that you really want. So I think this was actually partly put in to stop all the panic buying. So, it comes back to common sense, which isn't always common.
That's a very fair point. And you know what? If their PR people had been onto it, they would have said that to stop the panic buying. But maybe because they haven't said that, that's not the reason. But that is actually a very fair point. All right, let's move on. Because there are laws we all know and hopefully follow. You know, things like don't speed while driving, don't litter, don't kill anybody. But there are some rules around the world that you don't want to get caught out breaking. And you might not even know they exist. Did you know in Thailand it's illegal to defame or insult the royal family? In Singapore, you can go to jail for chewing gum on the street. And in a sacred spot in Japan, it's actually forbidden to die. Robert, what's something you would like to make illegal?
Oh, I think idiots. I think morons. I think
that's the end of the Ben Robert Robert show. Good night.
No, he only mentioned two of us.
I'd like to make illegal are the people who go shopping, right? And they get a packet of chips when they first go in. And then as they're shopping, they open the chips, right? And they eat the chips as they're shopping. And then at the end of it, they give the empty packet to the cash person, the cash register person, and say, yeah, I've eaten these. Now, this is,
Oh, that's okay.
Sorry, it's a trigger thing for me. Rubbish, absolutely not. That's rude. It's disgusting. Like, just wait until you get out of the... this happened to me when I used to work in an IGA, and I hated it because it was like, can you not wait for a little bit so I would make that illegal? Is that too... specific?
It's all right, but I thought you were about to say they didn't pay for it at the end, which I would have had a big issue with, but they paid.
No,
that's
I don't
all right.
like it when they...
What about you, Joe?
If they...
Wow. Come on, Joe.
Sorry, Joe.
Something on the
Wow, what would I like to see illegal? Badly produced reality TV.
Yeah.
Are we classified in that? Is that us?
Is she having a go at us? Oh my God, is Joe having a go at us?
Oh no, we're not reality TV.
This isn't badly produced.
Oh, there you go. Take it.
You're a beautiful woman.
I thought she was going to say tabloid magazines, but you know.
Well, there's
Daily Mail.
Although,
yes.
I like the Daily Mail. They cover our stories, but anyway. Ben,
I was going to say,
I'm all about the publicity.
I was going to say,
we're in different places.
Don't say anything bad about the Daily Mail Australia. They print a story on Rob McKnight every couple of days, so he has like an agreement with them that he has to every day say he loves the Daily Mail. We actually need you to do a voiceover at the end of the show that says, "I loved being here on the Ben, Rob, and Robbo show. Rob McKnight is the best producer ever. Please put this in the Daily Mail Australia."
Piss off.
Anyway, my thing that I want to make illegal is people eating and talking at the same time. It's got to go. I can't deal with it. There's like a misophobia.
Yes, we certainly know that, Ben, from our production meeting the other day. Whoa. Let's just say Ben made an issue of it.
I know. I told one of our producers off for talking and eating at the same time. Anyway, eating and talking at the same time, misophobia. I have a problem with like repetitive sounds. So it makes me makes my skin crawl.
Oh,
like,
so what does that mean? If I went...
Can I just say, it just feels like we're all a bit giddy because we're with the most popular girl in school and she's decided to sit with us at lunchtime and we're all a bit giddy and excited. Well, no, we are. I think
guilty as charged. I have no problem with that.
Yeah, guilty as charged. Like, yeah, that's fine. Yeah, we're just really excited, I guess. So,
all right. Our full entertainment report is coming up shortly, but let's get a quick hit right now of some entertainment news. And Ben, there's big news for the Alien franchise in space. No one can still hear you scream.
Thanks, Rob. Thanks for reading that. It was amazing.
Did I completely stuff up that intro?
That's
I feel
okay.
like I did. Sorry. I want to take two. We're not live. I'll edit it in post.
Okay.
Ben,
okay.
There's big news for the Alien franchise because in space, no one can... I still can't get it right. I'm going to get this, goddammit. No, I don't care if it takes the rest of the show. Ben, there's big news for the Alien franchise in space. Can no one still hear you scream? Yay! I got it.
Boom. You can read along with it in your book.
Whoa.
Okay. The original director of Alien, Ridley Scott, has now confirmed that a new installment of the long-running horror franchise is currently in development at the moment. I'm absolutely obsessed with these films, by the way. So it turns out, though, that it's unlikely the director is actually going to revisit his two previous films, which is Prometheus and Alien Covenant. Now, the popular director is... currently promoting the new series Raised by Wolves, which is going to be a show on HBO coming out this week. And he talked about some of the details about this Alien sequel. And I'm going to say, this is so exciting. So we can confirm that the working title of this new Alien film is called Alien Awakening. And Ridley Scott has also claimed it will link to the prequel trilogy, so you're not completely forgetting those prequel trilogies, and it's going to come before the 1979 original Alien. Anyway, he's also revealed the most exciting thing about this, and that is that Sigourney Weaver is a character he would like to bring back into the franchise. And interestingly enough, Sigourney, with the kind of technology we have these days, we will be able to see her playing maybe a younger, even younger version than the character Lieutenant Ripley from when the movie series first started. Yeah. So look, very exciting for those people out there who love aliens. I don't know, Rob, did you like the Alien movies?
Yeah, I did. I did like it, and I wasn't a huge fan. Like, I'm not obsessive about it, but I have watched the first three or four, and big fan. So it'll be interesting to see Sigourney all young again. Amazing what they can do. But what else is coming up in entertainment a little later in the show, Ben?
Well, later in the show, we are going to be talking about Donald Trump. Apparently, this video has surfaced with him sort of stepping into that old role of hosting Celebrity Apprentice, and he will fire President Obama. Plus, we're also going to be talking about a much-loved television show that everyone knows and dearly loves. It's apparently coming to an end, and that's all coming up a little bit later in the show.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Well, we are almost at the end of The Masked Singer, and last night it was Puppet who just missed out on a spot in the grand finale. And who was it? Well, it was none other than the Red Wiggle, Simon Price. Let's take a look.
She'll make you take your clothes off and go dancing in the rain. She'll make you live a crazy life, but you'll take away your pain. Like a bullet to your brain. Come on, upside, inside, out. She's living la vida. She'll push and pull you down, living la vida loca.
And Simon joins us now. Simon, welcome to the Ben, Robin, Robbo show.
Thank you, guys. Great to see you. Great to be here.
Simon, I feel like I'm cheating in a weird kind of way, because my kids were at the age of the previous Wiggles, and so I can't say that I've been as, committed to your version of the Wiggles, because my
Don't
kids are just
that
a bit older. I feel like I'm cheating.
I understand.
Cheating on the old red wiggle.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's right. It's always nice when maybe you get out of that wiggle zone. So I'm more than happy for you that you've moved on.
Yes, well, exactly. You've given me the chance. Yeah. Oh, let me tell you, I'm pleased to be out of that wiggle zone. Let me tell you that. But look, let's talk about The Masked Singer, because some people, Danny Minogue included, were terrified by the puppet costume. Did you secretly like the fact they were terrified you when you play a guy who is loved by kids to be a little bit terrifying? Did that appeal to you in some way?
Well, it actually it took me aback initially. I didn't expect that response at all. I mean, these clips they show of the puppet are actually quite terrifying. And the voice of the puppet has is kind of frightening as well. So I kind of understand why people had that fear. But I did get a little bit taken aback at first. I did enjoy it slightly, but then I thought, hang on a minute, this is actually a competition and people are meant to like me.
You found the one flaw there.
Yeah, well, I was going to actually ask you, were you ever offended by the selection choices by the judges? Now, I have to admit to you that I definitely thought you were Mark Holden and I was doing the touchdown and I thought I'd locked you down. How did that feel to be mistaken for Mark Holden?
Well, look, Mark Holden, he's a great singer. He's an Australian icon, isn't he? So that's okay. I don't mind that at all. I had the carnation. I was wearing the carnation. And a lot of the clues lead to Mark Holden. So, look, more than happy Mark Holden. There was quite a few random choices as well, which I'm not sure if they were seen during episodes, like Will Smith, Anthony Hopkins. That was an interesting one. But, Anthony Warlow was another one, and I'll take Anthony Warlow any day. He might not be that happy if people thought he was me, but that's all right. I'll take it.
You were a great Phantom. Like, your singing career is amazing. That's one thing I loved the Phantom of the Opera. I grew up listening to that, and I've heard your version of that. So, you know, you're an amazing stage performer. It's very easy that people thought you were Anthony Warlow.
Oh, look, that's very kind of you. Thank you. It was nice, you know, having been with the Wiggles for sort of 9 years now, it was nice to get back and sing a few different songs. Not songs even back in the day, my music theatre days, I'd normally sing, but it was a great opportunity to sing some different songs and have a bit of fun and wear a 9-foot puppet costume.
You did look good in that, I've got to tell you something. But you're talking about singing different songs. Was that part of the appeal, that you could perform in front of a slightly different audience?
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I would never, ever sing those songs ever, you know, or ever attempt them. And the music department there are so incredible. And so they changed the keys of the songs to suit because I've got a low voice, and which is another reason why I'd never normally sing those songs. But, yeah, to get a chance to sing that range of songs, all that different sort of material, and also being disguised so no one actually knows who you are, you feel a bit of safety behind that as well. But I'm amazed at the quality of sound they get out of that, because you're singing live. But the quality of sound they get out of those masks is quite incredible.
Simon, yeah. We have seen the filming of the finale was delayed. Everyone was there ready to go on, and then there was a COVID-19 positive case. I believe the filming of the finale went last night. How did it go?
Yeah, look, it went great. You know, really good. There's not much. I'm just involved in a group number, and that's all I know. And, you know, like... The public are trying to guess who everybody is. We're the same. We're all kept separate from each other. We have a minder who looks after us, who walks us around so we don't actually run into any other singers in the other masks. So literally you don't come in contact with anyone until you're on stage with them in that group performance, and you don't talk to each other. You might give a little wave and that's about it. And that's kind of, you have no interaction at all. So my guess and your guess, we're as good as each other with this one.
Now, I need to ask you a question about this because I heard a couple of rumours. Now, reality television, you've been in Ninja Warrior, you've now done The Wiggles. There's a couple of celebrity shows that are coming up at the back end of this year. Can you confirm or deny that you've turned down one of these? I mean, I didn't get told which one it was. It could be Celebrity Apprentice, I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here. They're even putting celebrities into Big Brother. Can you talk about whether or not you turned one of these down?
No, look, I haven't been approached by any other reality TV shows. All I can say is I lasted a lot longer on The Masked Singer than I did in Ninja Warrior.
Well, that is very true.
Simon, now the door is open. You've shown that you can do it, so who knows what's around the corner. Look, before we leave you, I just want to touch on this because you announced some very exciting news this week. You and your wife are expecting your first baby, so congratulations. What are you looking forward to most about being a dad? Is it listening to your own music?
Yeah, I might put Bluey on, actually.
Fair enough. Well, that's not fair enough. You have to, and look, you guys make great music, but you're going to have to suffer like every other parent, and you're going to have to listen to The Wiggles nonstop.
I know, I will. And I know all the children's entertainment out there. I'll be at all the concerts as well. But we're thrilled about having a baby. It's early next year. We're really excited, and we really can't wait.
Oh, fantastic, Simon. You are fantastic. A really nice guy. Thank you for being on the Ben, Robin, Robbo show today. We really appreciate it.
Thank you, guys. Great talking to you.
It's the Ben Live Shot of the Day. Where are you going today? You never know where you'll end up with the Ben Live Shot of the Day.
And today we're going to take you to Canada and have a look at the Niagara Falls as we go down on the Google map. This is the location we're going to, and now through to the live shot. And it's nighttime there, as you can see. It's a cloudy low of 14 degrees and a top of 23 degrees. But let's take a look at some feedback coming through to the show. And we've got Nicole saying, wow, that is one angry mowing man, referring to Jim Penman, who is calling for Dan Andrews to resign. We've also got Matthew saying, all Dave Jim Penman cares about is his profits. Yeah, I think you're right. Ah, oh, Joe, this one's for you. Carlotta has come in and said, hi, Joe, look, you're looking fabulous. Sending you best wishes, love, Carlotta. And I will say, Joe, Carlotta did call me the other day and say, you make sure you say g'day to Joe for me or I'll kill you. And, of course, I forgot to do that. So, you know, I'm a dead man walking. Glenn says... what does Glenn say? Glenn says, I'm getting a little teary watching that flame footage. Oh, yeah, it was really beautiful to see that again. Mary said, who doesn't love Joe? She is so classic and professional. Tim also says, that flame was amazing. And people are talking about whether the Olympics should go ahead. Glenn says, as long as the athlete's health is the priority. Cameron says, Joe should come on Drinky Thursdays with Reggie and see how crazy awesome the panel can get. So, oh, Joe, wow. On Thursdays we have Tipsy Thursday, where we drink during the show. And I think they want to come up for Reggie and see what kind of show we'd be having, because it would be great.
Jamie, I actually think that she rang her agent before while we were interviewing The Wiggle and was like, never book me on this show again. Goodbye. I'm only joking. She'll be here all week. Try the Palmer.
Jamie says, I need the ability to return. I never get the right light glove fitting. Oh, my God, neither do I. Travis says, regarding exchanges, Travis says people were abusing the system, especially with the kids' collectibles. Thank you. It's all very professional here, Joe. I think I've been on the terps already. Buying products and give them bonus items and then return them, that's why it was changed. Ah, that's interesting. And look, here we've got Reggie. She says, Daily Mail exclusive, Rob does
oh, there you go.
Flash a sausage in front of Benjamin Norris.
No. No, stop with this story. No one wants to hear. Stop.
And Gay says, let's finish on a nice one. I must say, Joe is the best guest you have ever had.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, thank you. Thanks, Dave. Yes. Thanks, everyone.
All right. Look, it's Joe.
Sorry, I'm looking at Robert's face. Move on. Okay.
Robbo, just be careful or I'm going to do the nudie run right now and then you'll be in trouble.
Please stop. Even your wife just said no.
She literally gave me the wind up. No. She was like, cut it. All right.
Yeah, and weirdly, the way that she gave you the wind up was not with the pointer, but was with the pinky. She did that weirdly, which is not industry standard.
She
Let's
knows.
Move on, though. We're going to talk to Sam Dastyari.
Move Look, on. It is time to talk politics. And for that, we talk to Sam Dastyari. Hello, Sam.
G'day. Good to be here.
Like, mate, it's good to have you here. Can I just say, I want to talk COVID-19 politics today. And for the longest time, it seemed like all sides were desperately trying to appear like this pandemic was above politics. I think we can agree they're not even pretending any longer. I want to play part of Nine News Melbourne last night, and it's a report on Scott Morrison reacting to the Victorian roadmap.
The plan that was outlined yesterday, I hope, is a worst-case scenario. I see it as a starting point.
Scott Morrison slammed Victoria's roadmap for its economic pain and conservative new thresholds.
But what I can't help but be struck by is that under the thresholds that have been set in that plan, Sydney would be under curfew now.
No, they wouldn't, because they've not had the community transmission we've had. So we are different.
The PM also scolding the Andrews government on its data modelling and contact tracing.
It's important that we work on building that tracing capability in Victoria. New South Wales is the gold standard.
While turning up the heat on the state's recovery package.
It is right that the Victorian government make the first response to set out what the economic supports are they will put in place to deal with the measures that they have put in place.
Sam, is this a political issue now rather than what's best for everyone?
Oh, no.
This was the bigger story. There was always politics. Now, for a period of time, the smartest, best politics the government felt, and so did the states, was to be the whole, we get along, we're all friends, it's all working well. At some point, that was going to break. Look, my personal view, this was always going to happen. I think the Prime Minister's probably moved a little bit too fast. I think there would have been smarter politically to play that blame game a little bit later, a little bit further down the line. But that aside, you know, every time I speak to Rob, you seem to get surprised that politicians perform and play politics. That's what
no,
they
no,
do.
No, no, no. I know what you're saying there, and I know everything is about politics. And Dan Andrews last night on the 7:30 report saying he's not thinking about politics. Of course, he's on some level thinking
yeah,
about
right,
politics,
right?
But I guess I'm surprised at how overt it's being, because I don't think the electorate is in the mood for politicking. And we're seeing it, and I think it's going to hurt Morrison, isn't it?
Look, I spoke to a pollster during the week who does a lot of you know, the Labor Party polling and that back in the day. They'd recently done the Northern Territory election, and then they've done the Queensland election as well. Their observation was this. The public's view at the moment is, as much as they say, you know, they're upset and they don't like, and they don't, there is an acceptance that hard measures need to happen. And in fact, you're almost rewarded for being tough. The joke being that if Anastasia Palaszczuk executed 5 Victorians tomorrow, the view would be, well, it's only 5 deaths.
Bloody hell. Jesus Christ.
You can't go far enough in terms of people's view out there on what to do. So where I think...
So let me ask you this then, Sam. Does it work for Andrews and Palaszczuk being attacked by Scott Morrison and with Palaszczuk from Gladys Berejiklian, the New South Wales Premier? Does it actually play well for them in their home states? Because
massive.
It's like the rest of Australia is attacking them. We're going to, you know, like, we're going to support our Premier.
Massively. Look, Dan's situation is obviously slightly different in Victoria because there is a bit of a blame element and that associated with it. But look, there is a Queensland election on the 31st of October. There will be blanket television ads that will be the opposition leader there, Deb Franklin thing, who's came out on many occasions saying, open the borders, open the borders. Anastasia said, I will not open the borders. She was kind of tough on that. That's their election platform. That's their platform,
yeah.
Right? She got it right. Now, Dan's in a slightly different position, obviously, because of the blunders with the hotel contracts and whatnot. There's blame to be apportioned. But even that being said, right, you get through it, you get through the other end, there is maybe still life there. But being politicians love and are very comfortable with being attacked. I always say this to people in business and that, who always have this view of, oh, well, I'll attack this politician for making a bad decision on policy and blah, blah, blah business. I always say the same business letter, same thing. I say, you don't understand. They call each other corrupt and put it on the front page of the paper and they laugh about it. Right? You get one, like the people you deal with in the media, and you know, you obviously have a media background, Rob, you know, they get one bad gossip column in someone's online blog and for 4 days they don't sleep and they just want to talk to their
yes.
friends about it. Politicians are very comfortable about being punched. The one thing they all do and have done is get their living bejeez bashed out of them repeatedly. So they're quite comfortable with conflict, and you have to be in politics. I mean, it was Hawkey once said to me, he goes, this is when I was running for Parliament, he goes, son, no one ever made it into Australian Parliament without staring someone straight in the face on a couple of occasions saying, screw you, I'm taking it.
Oh, wow.
And They fight in politics, right? And they're comfortable with it. So these kind of argy-bargies that are happening at the moment, again, no one takes it personally because they're so used to getting beaten up by each other.
Yeah, but Sam, there's also the double standards. You've also got, you know, each different premier, you've got Gladys, you know, piling on Anastasia for not opening a borders while Gladys actually keeps the borders closed to Dan Andrews. You've got Tasmania, almost impossible to get into, Western Australia, who might actually consider becoming its own country because they're so happy to keep everyone
Hopefully.
Out. So the double standards are quite extraordinary. And then you've got ScoMo, who's actually just going, hey, look over here, and that way you won't think about my aged care minister, not actually knowing his portfolio.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, look, completely. You completely agree. about the double standards in this media cycle is it doesn't matter. You're never held to account, right? You're just no longer held to account based on what you said yesterday or last week or a month earlier. And so the pace of that media cycle, I mean, you're barely ever held to account anyway. Now, I'm completely agreeing with you, right? What you say today, what you said yesterday, what you say tomorrow, that cycle moves so fast, so fast. So, okay, look at McGowan in WA. The best thing that happened for him was the full-page ads and going to war with Clive Palmer, right? Because Clive Palmer is, you know, but, and this is how it gets strange, it's almost also the best thing for Clive, right? Where Clive has decided that he wants to be a guy who has 15 to 20% of the community support him. So he'll just bash, you know what I mean? He's happy to be the demon, the evil guy for the other 80%. He doesn't care. It's the Hansen mentality. When Pauline Hanson gets called a racist and gets pulled from, you know, breakfast television, that's great for her Facebook feed, right? Yeah. Her audience, she's not trying to get 51%. She's trying to get 20 at most. And so you can play it to angles. And again, there is that state parochialism. There's the hypocrisy of the state governments. And don't forget, you know, when we talk about long histories, just at the start of the year, Gladys Berejiklian and the Prime Minister were at war over who was responsible when he tried to blame her for the bushfires.
You know, Sam, I want to quickly ask you a question. I've been dying all week to get to you, and I have been speaking to a couple of friends who I don't know what to do with because I don't know how to shut them down. I would say that they're conspiracy theorists because they're jumping on my Facebook and they're saying things like, you know, Daniel Andrews sold the Melbourne ports to the Chinese, the percentage of Australia, we're losing it to the Chinese, that, you know, Dan is a, you know, a dictator. You know, there's some really confusing times and these people are genuinely out there. This is what I'm scared of. They genuinely believe all of these facts. What do I do?
Yeah. Well, first of all, you block Pete Evans.
Yeah.
On that too, there is that weird kind of thread, and there's a couple of points there to unravel. Firstly, I mean, look, Facebook just made a decision a couple of years. Facebook is just awful now, right? Facebook has become such a difficult place to be on. You know, it's where your aunties go to spouse kind of crazy stuff. Like, you should have seen my feed. I remember a few weeks back there was obviously the bombing in Lebanon. It wasn't even a bombing, or was a bomb, but wasn't intentional. And my Facebook feed became fed up with, you know, it's Jewish conspiracy, must be Israel, right? You have something happen down in Victoria, and like the crazy things, right? Like the idea that the Chinese, and by the way, they don't own the ports down there. It was sold off for the purpose of fixing railway crossings. But the idea that as a result, the Chinese are going to come and dominate the port and not let Australians leave their ship. It just doesn't make sense, right? But it's not about that anymore. It's about rhetoric. What's really interesting is one of their kind of more nutty MPs, Craig Kelly. So he's a backbench MP from New South Wales, really taking that conspiracy theory mantle. His engagement on Facebook was 10 times more than the Prime Minister's over the past month, even though he has like 1/8 the followers. You know, the thing is now, you can micro-play to constituencies, and you're just talking to people. Again, you would talk about Pete Evans and kind of half in jest, but that 10-15% market is huge. It's huge for him, right? If you accept the fact that you're not going to be primetime television, just watch. And I know this is from us, he's about to launch his own kind of web page, internet kind of, own kind of free TV-style platform, right? And if you can find people who are going to pay you 10, 15 bucks a month, and you can find several thousand of them, and he will, it's a huge place to be. And what's happened with those conspiracy theories is there really is something for everyone now, and Sam, you've got that kind of micro-segmentation.
Sorry to cut you off, but a quick question for you. Does Craig Kelly actually believe these kind of conspiracy theories or these kind of things that he puts out? Or is it just because he knows that he'll get many of those people who will pay $15? Where does the truth lie in this?
Yeah, you know, like both. Well, it starts off with a little bit of shred of belief, and then you start playing to your audience. I mean, the classic of all this is obviously that Alex Jones nutcase in the US, right? But it happens with politicians all the time. Right. So I give a speech, I give a rally, I start going down a policy platform. That feedback loop of people coming back and saying, I love it when you did this, I did that, it frames you and you find yourself going down that kind of path. And it happens in media as well. It's that classic feedback loop of what people are saying back to you as well. And so, yeah, at some point I think he believed in some of it, but it's also great politics for him.
Yeah.
Well, Sam, I always love your insight. Thank you so much. We'll see you again next Tuesday. Thank you, mate.
I'll see you next week.
Thanks, Sam.
Thank you. Bye.
Now, look, that brings us to the end of the show. Joe, you have been absolutely fantastic. And just a programming note, we are going to record the entertainment section, which we've run out of time for, and we are going to post it to the Ben Robin Robbo Facebook page. So just go to BRR Show on Facebook. We are going to record it as soon as the show comes to an end because Ticker is standing by and we will cross to them. But, Joe, thank you so much for doing this. Everyone's telling us we're giddy today. Someone called you. Someone asked, "Is Joe Rob's celebrity hall pass?" You know, I. You're not Joe, by the way. I promise you, you're not. Or is that? Hey, oh, maybe I've insulted her now. I don't know. Sorry.
Oh, go on. Ask her the question. Hit her up.
No, all I was going to say is, if you're going to actually admit you're somebody's celebrity hall pass, you don't talk about your private bits being less than exciting.
Good point, Joe. Good point. Look, it's been an absolute thrill. Thanks for doing this. And
Thank you,
Better
Joe.
Homes and Gardens, keep an eye on it. It's one of the best shows on TV, has been around for years. And, Joe, we just love everything you do. Thanks so much.
Thanks, guys. Thank you so much for having me. All right. Thank you.
We'll see you tomorrow on the Ben Robin Robbo Show. Bye-bye.
It's the Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo, Ben Robin Robbo Show.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more, with Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to Quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. Quince.com/style.